So welcome, listeners, and welcome to our fourth installment of the AFMS podcast. And today I'm joined by Associate Professor Nicole Jones, who is a member of the Oceans Graduate School at the University of Western Australia and the Deputy Director of the Oceans Institute there as well. So hi and welcome, Nicole.
Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thanks very much for joining us. And we've already discussed we have a slight time difference happening across the continent. So thanks again for making time. So you recently gave a talk to the Australian Fluid Mechanics Society seminar series. Could you tell us a little bit about the topic of that seminar and potentially a little bit about your research in general?
Yep. So I chose to talk about our research in ocean boundary layers for the seminar. And the reason why I chose that topic was because I know that boundary layers is something that are thought about across all fluid mechanics disciplines. Within the ocean, boundary layers are important both at the air-water interface and at the seabed water interface. And the talk focused on some of our research at the seabed. And the reason why the boundary layer at the seabed is important is because it's the place where a lot of the energy that makes its way into the ocean through tides and through wind, it's the region where a lot of that energy is dissipated. And so we have done a combination of field observations. So we take ships out into the ocean and we put in instrument frames that sit on the seabed. In this case, I was talking about measurements when we were in about 250 metres of water. And we take measurements of turbulence and mean flow, as well as the stratification, so the temperature of the water at different heights above the seabed, to understand the mixing processes that go on that determine the height of that boundary layer, and to understand the exchange of momentum and heat across that boundary layer.
Right. So just to confirm, when we're talking about boundary layers, we're talking about the layer of fluid that's directly adjacent to the seabed, right? So how things move along and right. So was there a particular, objective of those measurements that you were taking that you were trying to address?
Yeah. So one of the issues we have in oceanography is we need to be able to model what's happening in those regions because they're not well resolved in a numerical model. So if we're talking about an ocean circulation model, how do we parameterize those dynamics that are not going to make it into the model itself, because the scale of the resolution, the grid resolution, is going to be too large.
Right. I guess I'm again showing my hand as a numerical modeler myself, but I always find this a really amazing fact, especially when we start talking about things like the ocean, that what you're talking about is you're trying to get a model of something that happens over a kind of ocean scale, or even over the size from the bottom of the ocean to the top, and yet there are these processes that are happening on a millimeter scale in terms of the or even sub-millimeter scale in terms of the turbulent fluctuation that's happening in the flow. And that's what you're talking about with the parameterization, right? That you need a way to capture that without having to deal with all of the fine detail of the turbulent structure.
That's correct. So we found that in 250 metres of water, that the kind of reasonably well-mixed layer was still on order 10 metres above the seabed, and that the typical kind of log layer was very close to the seabed, so it was less than 1 metre. And our ocean models, when we're even a regional ocean model where we're trying to predict the ocean over scales of hundreds of kilometres, wouldn't resolve those length scales at all. So we need to have a model, a function essentially that we can put into our model that says, let's predict what's happening to the amount of energy that's lost. Let's predict what's happening to the density stratification from this information, rather than actually being able to resolve it in the numerical model.
Right. So it's a way of using these measurements, I guess, to lump the effect that you're seeing, that you can then put that into a model that is of a size that's actually solvable with the computing that you have access to.
And the other application that's quite important is that it gives us a guideline also to how measurements should be made in the future. So one of the issues that occurs is that quite often when industry is making measurements so that they can do design work for subsea infrastructure, they'll take measurements at the closest they can get to the seabed in an easy way. And unfortunately, that ends up being 5-10 metres above the seabed. So that's another thing that our observations and analysis of observation shows, is that that's really not good enough. If you want to be able to predict what the maximum currents are at the seabed, then you need to be measuring much closer to the seabed in the first place.
Yeah, right. So there's really this kind of fundamental understanding of, you know, of these structures, of how things mix, of the kinds of lengths you need, is not only of interest from a fundamental perspective, but it really does become a very practical thing to recommend. That, you know, you're talking about, well, we need to be able to know this so that when we send some gigantic ship to take a measurement, we make sure that that measurement is done in the right place.
Yeah,
you know, it's exactly. I think it's a real highlight of where these sort of these fundamental considerations and the fundamental fluid mechanics becomes really important from not only a academic but also from a very practical perspective.
Yeah.
Great. My next prompting question is always, how does this, the research, impact on society and wider science? But I think you've covered that quite well. You're saying that, you know, by taking these measurements, you're able to guide industry in the kind of measurements that they need to be able to develop subsea infrastructure and other infrastructure. Are there other areas where you see this having impact?
Yeah, it also has very strong environmental connections. So because we're putting these parameterizations then into ocean circulation models, it impacts our ability to predict. And when we're using ocean models for prediction, they can be for industrial applications, but they're also for environmental applications. So if we want to understand, what's happening to sediment transport on the shelf, then we need to understand what's happening in that boundary layer close to the seabed. If we want to predict what's happening to the replenishments of nutrients up onto the shelf in the areas of the ocean that are well lit by the sunlight, and hence where primary production occurs, then we need to also have good models of what's happening with the mixing in the water column, so how those nutrients might make it back up to the surface layers. And then on a very large scale, we rely on predictions of both the ocean and the atmosphere into the future when we're looking at how our Earth is going to respond to climate change. So if we think about these very large scale models where we have the atmosphere and the ocean interacting, the ocean plays a very large role in the redistribution of heat and the transport of gases throughout the ocean. So we need to make sure that all the pieces that are going into those very large scale models are the best that they can be, so that our predictions into the future are the best that they can be, which allows us then to, you know, make decisions and plan accordingly.
Right. So what I find fascinating about all of this is the interplay between the fundamental and the very practical here. You have a fundamental flow process, a boundary layer, but to understand that, you need to get on a ship and take some measurements near the seabed, and then those measurements can improve a model that calculates another really fundamental process, basically how energy is dissipated near the seabed, which can then be fed up to a model that predicts how the Earth's ocean and climate system will behave. I think that's stunning. So while we're discussing flows and transport processes, how is it that you found your way into working in this field?
Well, I started, with an environmental engineering degree for my undergraduate degree. And that was really motivated strongly by wanting to work in an area where I could make a difference to our natural world, and to kind of create an environment where people could have less impact on the natural world, and we could live more sustainably. And when I was undertaking that course, I was exposed to environmental fluid mechanics, and I really enjoyed that. And then I found that this was the perfect way to couple my love of being in the water, which I, you know, was a person who grew up in Perth and spent a lot of time at the beach, some sense of intuitive understanding, I think, of what happens in fluid motion, and just, you know, how gloriously beautiful it is, with practical outcomes, I guess. I like to find solutions to problems. So while I can get very involved in thinking about very small scale processes, I do find it important to be always thinking about what are the big applications, what are the big problems that we're trying to solve here, what, you know, what are the grand challenges that this is going to fit within.
Well, I think you've demonstrated today very clearly that you do that very successfully. I've certainly learned a lot about how fluid mechanics is interacting with oceanography and even climate science, and I'm sure our listeners have too. So thank you so much again for sharing. If you'd like to learn more, you can catch video of Nicole's seminar at our website, afms.org.au, along with a whole series of recordings of other great seminars of fluids and flows. Thanks for listening, and remember you can reach us on Twitter with the handle fluidsanz.